Sorry.
Yes, we all have to deal with our own demons, don't we? Okay. Even those named Ben. Okay.
Okay, now we have to edit that out.
From the good demons. From the good demons only, of course. Okay. You want to edit that out, I'm okay with it. Alright, Amar Abaye, Meresh Havamina, Haida Lo Achle Yarka, Denafalataka. The reason why you don't eat vegetables that fell on the tray. It's Mishum Isusa. I don't know if Anafalataka means they fell off the tray. What?
I think that there's a change in the.
This says that it fell onto the tray.
Ataka is at least the gear sab in front of us, but it means somehow it fell in. It, whatever it is, what? Okay, the question is, what's his source? Is what I really want to know. Okay, that's a svara. That's an imendeshim isvara. He didn't. I didn't because it's ma'us. Either if it fell on the floor because it fell on the floor, or apparently they didn't hold of the 10-second rule. Apparently they say food does not pick up bacteria so fast. So the time-honored rule of parents, you know, is actually not a bad rule. We obviously also distinguish between lach and yavish. But anyway, but even by lach, they say it's not so fast. They studied this. Believe it or not, they studied this issue. When you have enough universities and enough people who need to get tenure for things, so they study all sorts of interesting things.
Okay.
So it could be you have all the food stuff that's on it. I don't know if they had a ka'ar on, probably a ka'ar on top, maybe had a ka'ar on top of the tak, I'm not sure. You know from the Gemara in the Mishnah in the 21st to 22nd parak of Shabbos, that, you know, if they were eating the chicken, they'd throw all the bones and shells and whatever stuff on the tavla, and it could be it was a car on top of the tavla, and that's what he's talking about. So if it falls off the plate onto the table with all the other schmutz, so you don't eat it because of misusa. Amar limar mishum the kasha the reah hapeh. It's bad, it's because of bad breath. Now, I assume this is somewhat shade and related, because I can't imagine that just because it falls on the taka, that's going to give you more bad breath. You know, vegetables, maybe, you know, if it's onions and garlic and so on, it won't make a difference where it falls. They have that inherent power. Okay. So then, V'amar Abayim, Eresh Havamina, Haidelo Yosve Tose Marziva, the reason why you're not supposed to sit underneath a spout, okay? It's like Abayim is saying all these things that are like, yeah, of course. And then Rabba said, no, you got it all wrong. It's a very funny... I'm sure there are certain scholars of Agada who would do some very interesting things with this. One who shall go unmentioned by name, who could probably find all sorts of interesting metaphors and allusions in this.
Was Abaye really convinced by
this? I don't know. Or I don't know. Like, I mean, you look at some of these. Don't sit under. It's like, don't sit in the middle of the road. I thought that was because you could get run over by the cars. No! That's what this is like. Don't sit underneath the water spout because Mishum Shopkin, because people are going to pour water on you. No. Amar li mar Mishum Deshtiche Mazikin. Nah, because that's where the Mazikin hang out. Right, this is an unbelievable story. And again, I'm not quite sure what to do with the story. Hani Shakulai. Shakulai are people carriers. Dahavu Daru Chavisa Dahamra. Okay, always remember in your vocalizing, do not confuse Chamra and Chamara. Okay? You probably only confuse the two when you've had a little too much Chamra. So Chamara is a donkey, Chamra is wine. And for those who know a little Hebrew, know that Chamor, that vowel is unchanging. And when it shifts to Aramaic or one to the other, that's what they call the Canaanite shift. So that will be a Kamatz Gadol in Aramaic and a Cholam in Hebrew, like Shalom, the Cholam and Shalom, and Tov, all those become Kamatz Gadols in Aramaic. So here, they were taking a, so chamor is chamara. So they were taking a barrel.
What's daru?
Daru means to carry.
Does it mean they lived?
No, that's Hebrew. We're learning Aramaic here. We're reading Aramaic here at least. No, daru means to carry. It's a word I suspect is Bavli Aramaic. I don't think. The Eretz Yisrael word is ta'an. And the standard literary Aramaic word is nital. And as lasseis would be lemital in unklus and yonasan and neophiti would be lemitan. Here it's daru chavi. I'm not familiar with this word appearing in the Targumim, but it's Bavli Aramaic. Daru chavita dachamra They were carrying a barrel of wine. Ba'u li'ispuche, li'itafuche probably. They wanted to rest. Okay? To be probably like, to be nafach means to get a chance to breathe. I believe the same word, although I may be confusing it, is used in the beginning of the Gemara and Shabbos. No, no, it's lafushe. No, that's a different word. Okay. The other word would be lafushe, which means to sort of take a break. So they need to take a rest. Osvuha tose marzeva. They put it underneath the marzev. And what happened? Paka. The barrel broke. It exploded. Aso lakame demar baravashi. They came to Mar Baravashi and complained. And apparently he realized that the person responsible, the entity responsible, was a shade. So what did he do? Apik shipure shamte. He took out his shofar and he put him in chayrim because he has to show up to a din Torah. Now normally actually you send hasmana before you put someone in chayrim, but he did so. Asa lakame. So that apparently got the shade's attention. He comes in front of Mar Baravashi. Amar le amai tavet hachi. He said, why'd you do that? You were mazik. Why'd you damage his stuff? So amar le, hechi avet. What am I going to do? Ki osve beunai. Unai is oznai. When he puts it in my ear, so you, when someone sticks something in your ear, what are you supposed to do other than blow it out? So the guy puts his bow right underneath my marzev. It's really annoying. So Amar le, at beduchta deshchichei rabim, my boys, what are you doing? Why are you there? You should not be, you, a shade, should not be hanging out in a place where people commonly hang out. You have no right to be there. And therefore, atu deshanis, right, and that's the reference to the Gemara in Bava Kama about Kol Mishana, right, is the one who's technically Chayiv, or if he's Mishana and his stuff gets damaged, he's Pata, but you're Mishana. And therefore he says to him, Zil Shlim, you have to pay. Okay? So Amar Le, Hashata, Nami, Likbali Mar Zimna, V'Ifra. He said, give me some time. Koveas Man, and I'll get the money by then. Kavale Zimna. So he said, he set for him a time. Ki mita zimna, when the time arrived, Yaakov, he was tarried a little bit. He didn't get there quite on time. Ki asa amar le amai lo asis bezimnach. So he said, why didn't you come on time? Amar le, kol mili detzayir v'chasim v'chayil umini, leslan reshusa lemishkal mine, adish mashkachinan mi didef keira. So he said that anything that is either tied up or sealed, or in kayal, I assume is enclosed, or counted, we're not allowed to take. Now, here is a point, which I'm not going to dwell on at great length, but I think is a... I think all these really sort of point to a certain, I'll call them a disbelief in Shadim, which is that if the Shadim in any way would be recognizable in their actions, then they can't act. Meaning, if something is sealed up, you seal something up, and then someone goes in and takes something, it's going to be obvious that something went in and took something. Or, if something has been counted in a pile, and someone goes and takes one, it's going to be obvious. This is, in effect, the flip side of what Chazal say, that ein bracha metzuya of a davar hasamuya, what's the expression? Hasamim in a ayin. Right? The way I understand that, and I'm not a philosopher, but I think it's at least something worthy of thinking about in terms of Chazal driving it, is that we don't generally assume that there are going to be nisim negluyim. And therefore, a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't act. You know, I think our general belief is the laws of nature are unchanging. We also do believe that God can intervene. Now, the fact that God can intervene doesn't mean that he chooses to intervene. This is a confusion that some people have. Some believers have, that just because we believe God can, therefore God does. And therefore, apparently there seems to be this notion that if the divine intervention, in effect, in breaking the laws of nature would be obvious, then it doesn't happen. In effect, it's one of those questions I wonder... just as something that has happened already, you know, the Gemara in Brachos says that if you hear a voice scream out in the city, so a person who says Yiratzon, that this thing should not be for my house, is a tefillah shav. Why? Because it happened already. It can't change. And my assumption is that people who know who was crying out and why they were crying out, so that can't change. God does not, contrary to Superman 1, I think it was, we don't turn the clock back. God doesn't turn the clock back and have a redo, you know, like Groundhog Day or anything else like that. You don't have such a thing. And therefore, Anything that's already an established fact or can be established will be obvious. God doesn't intervene on it. So one of those questions, and I can't answer this question, but let's say, you know, the weathermen, you know, predict, you know, they, you know, so weather is not a perfect science, although it's usually, you know, the closer you are, it gets to be fairly accurate. Does it make sense if there's no rain anywhere 300 miles to the west? Does it make sense to be mispal for Geshem? Is that a tefillah shofar? Now, it could be you'll argue it's not, because sometimes freakish things happen, you never know, and out of nowhere things do happen. But supposing, and that may never happen, and I know that's the old question about what's the thing about, you know, if one bird flaps its wings, it may disturb the entire system or something like that.
Butterfly.
Okay, so sorry.
Jinx on all of you.
So the point is, let us say that your weather mapping system became so good, so accurate, it predicted with 100% accuracy. Would the Ribbono Shel Olam be willing to intervene to bring rain at that point? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, there's the uncertainty principle.
What's that? I'm not sure that that has any relevance to a macro level such as this, but I don't know, and I'm therefore I'm not going to engage either philosophical or the physics speculation. But I do wonder about that question to the extent that. What's that? That might be a different story. In other words, look, you might say you can't be mispal for rain in the next 5 days, but you know, generally once you go beyond the number of days, it's always changing. So maybe I don't know the answer to the question, but this notion of the shade has no reshus to get into anything that's already been counted or sealed up means the shade really can't leave his footprint. Sorry to borrow that Gemara, but he can't leave recognition. Okay.
So I don't understand how that.
So basically, he had to wait for an opportunity that he could take something
and give it to him.
And he does introduce the idea of hefker here. I don't know if that meant that he couldn't find anything that wasn't hefker, so he had to wait for a hefker thing. I'm not really sure. But anyway, he said, I need a lecture time to find the money to pay him. Okay. Very interesting. V'yamar Abaye. I didn't know that Shaydin were mechuyif to come to it. It's very odd. Very, very odd. Yeah, Ben? I don't know. In other words, it's almost like this is a secret that only some people know. I don't know what the story is, but he can't take from anything that would leave a road. That's what's being described, right? In other words, if you have a pile that's not counted, he could take something. But once the pile's counted, he can't take. What's the difference?
It's convenient.
Isn't something more so when you lose something and you don't know where it's gone?
I'm not a Bucky in demonology. Yes. So I've learned most of these Gemaras at one time or another, but not all of them, you know, are fresh in my mind. But you could go if you have little else that interests you or in a little downtime, you know, it's hard because while it's entertaining in certain ways, it's also Aramaic, which for most people is hard. But if you feel like going through the sugyas himself, and you might find some of the materials in Arvei Psachim, you know, the Zugos. Maybe it's there. I don't know. You know, why
it's a good thing to do before Pesach.
Yeah. On Shadim? On demonology. Have you read it?
So
what do you know about it?
It's good.
What's the name of this book?
I don't remember.
Okay. Does he have the comparative material to Persian materials, I assume? Okay. Jason?
But it's also your Yerushalmi stuff. It's just like a general... Demons were just Ba'avir.
It's true, but there's much more of it in the Ba'avir than the Yerushalmi. I think Lieberman has a point somewhere that you should not assume. It's clear sorcery is being practiced in Eretz Yisrael. The classic example... I meant to mention this, actually.
It's also like in Mishnah. It's in Tanakh sources as well. They're...
Where do you have it in the Mishnah, explicit?
I think... There are a bunch of things that he has that are Tana'itic
versus Mishnah is different. I'm not saying there's none. I do not recall. I mean, you have Bas Kol by Aguna in the 16th Perek Yevamos, but I don't know if the term shade is there. But they might even be that. That's not used as a demon per se, as much as a voice that you hear calling or something. I don't remember what the term is used there.
The woman calling from the pit, we're afraid of the shade. If you hear a voice from the pit,
yeah, is that where
it says shade?
Yeah, I think the word mazik is also
it's not. It is very uncommon in the Mishnah, if it, to the extent that it even exists.
Yeah.
Does the Mishnah say that, though? Or is that the reason given in the Gemara? Go check. So I want to make one comment. I don't know much about, you know, my sense of Yushalmi, which is more limited than a Bavli, is that there's far less, to whatever extent there is material on Shein than there. I think that's generally accepted. That's a fact. That doesn't mean there was no demonology in Eretz Yisrael. But, although one wouldn't be surprised given the Persian influence, why is much more the Bavli. The one famous case of sorcery is that I'm aware of is also... What's that?
Oh, yeah, the witches.
That's a story in the Bavli. That's not in the Mishnah. You gotta. This is one of those general concerns about the way we learn things, is that when we learn things at a certain stage, we blur all the boundaries.
Also they're like.
So 1 second. So the case in the Yushalmi is why people wanted to move the famous Bryson Subas that says that Mneasakana, so they were Noag Lichnos a day early, but you're not allowed to. You can be Kones on Tuesday, not on Monday. Mnea Ones is Mutter. What is the Ones? The Yushalmi says Ones Kshafim. So Lieberman explains, I think this is probably Pshat, and you find this in the Targum of Eretz Yisrael as well. Lo Yachavol Rechaim Varachev Kinefesh Uchovel is a prohibition on sorcerers binding the bride and groom, right, so that they can't consummate the marriage. So obviously this actually may work if it's psychologically, but people used to believe such a thing could be done, and this is the kind of thing that if you believe it can be done, it can be done. What are you doing? You're not sprinkling magic dust on the floor, are you? So the Yushalmi is that if obviously you want to move up the wedding night date so that the sorceress couldn't practice the kshafim. So you do have such things, but I don't think the demonology is as well developed. Jason, you had a question. You had a question.
I was going to say it sounds like convenient for people who don't believe in shading to say that it can only happen in things that are indefinite. That shading can only act on things that are indefinite.
Well, that's what I was saying. In other words...
Oh, because it always leaves room for people who don't believe in it.
To say so. Correct.
So was that purposely done?
I don't know. I made that ha'ara in passing here. Then that raises questions in the first place.
Real quickly.
Sometimes Chazal tell us things this way because... If he told us this way, we wouldn't listen. You know, I didn't give my speech this year because we didn't have shiur right before about drinking on Purim. But, Rishonim will argue that you're not supposed to drink on Purim because the Gemara tells the story. The Gemara states the din, and then it tells the story about one person killing the other in his drunken stupor. So what does the Chacham walk away from this Gemara with? Don't drink on Purim, right?
Well, that could always revive my
silly story.
What's that?
That could always revive him.
Don't dress as a pirate on Purim.
So bottom line is, you do sometimes wonder what the message is, but I don't know. I just find that, I do find that very interesting. All right. Yeah.
Just real quickly about that, I think that his general thing about Nisim Gluim is the free will thing. That if, that that the more that you see Nisim Gluim, that the less free will you have, because the more...
I'm sorry.
I
hate to tell you that. It didn't stop the Jews 40 days after witnessing Har Sinai making a golden calf, so I don't think that's not a suspension of free will. Okay, I do not want to get into this discussion. And the discussion is over. Okay. Now, continue. The reason why you take the top of the barrel, you skim the water off and throw it away is Mishum Tzivsa. Rashi says, Kisamim and Kashim, there's the dirt and the junk that floats to the top, the twigs, the splinters of wood. So, however, Amar Limar, Mishum Deika Mayim Haroim. No, Mayim Haroim. And Rashi says that because sometimes the Shadim drink from the barrel, and therefore you don't want the. I don't know what shadim germs. I'm not sure what they are. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zacharach should really have liked this because the shadim leave their germs on the top of the barrel. Okay. What's that? No, I just said not in the Mishnah. I'm not saying that's kishuf, by the way. Yeah. That's still not shadim though. But I just said it's not in the Mishnah itself. That's all. What's that?
He says that they have slightly different.
You would expect, right? Okay. Because it's like you have the mission of Eretz Yisrael and the mission of Bavel, so you have demonology of the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. No, okay. Yes.
It's very likely that many, if not all, rabbis in the Gemara believed in demonology, correct?
Not all, but many did, yeah.
So is it likely from the fact that many of these types of sections are included that the redactors of the Bavli were all, clearly also believed in demonology? Like, they would have put it in if they believed it.
They certainly
Probably. I mean, I don't know.
There's no question that they believe. There's no question.
Right, but not every, but not everybody seems to believe in it. I'm a Rhyme who seemed to disregard this. Like Ravina.
But he, I mean, they're also Gemaras with Ravina dealing with demons. Just like a matter of degree, they all clearly believe.
Okay.
It.
Okay. So anyway. Yeah. Yes. There's more than one. No, it's not only. It's not only because. Firstly, there are hygienic reasons. Secondly, what's that?
Yeah, there's like the two reasons.
So there are two reasons given, and so for that reason we get takana. That's all. I don't tie my shoes in a particular order or put them on a particular order. I cut my fingernails. Yes, I do. Okay, moving on. So Abayi said it's mishum dikamayim haroyim. Hahu bar shida, dahava be rapapa. There was a shade who used to hang out apparently in Rapapa's house. He was a mishamish. Okay. Also, la suye maya minara. It's possible. I mean. The problem is the yud actually between the shin and the dal makes it less likely. So that bar shida papa azal asuy mai minara. So he went to bring water to the river. It sounds a little like the golem story, you know. Well, I mean, obviously he didn't get it. He must have gotten it from whatever his name was, Yudel. What, you know what?
Yudel got it.
Right. See, I know he pirated from that, but obviously the Gemara got it from the Golem story. And the Bar Shida took his time. So ki asa amar le amayi kavis. So why did you? He said, what took you so long? What delayed you? Amar lehu ad chalfu mayim chalfi mayim harayim. I had to wait for the mayim harayim to pass by, and the shade they've been drinking. Ad hachi, when he came back. So while he's watching him, chazinu de kashada mayim yipuma de chatzva. So he saw that Rapapa or the members of his house were sort of not, you know, they skimmed the top of the barrel off anyway. So Amar ihava yadana de regilisu lemevet hachi lo yakvi. Had I known that you knew to do this, then I wouldn't have bothered to wait. I would have just gotten the water. So Tosus asked an interesting question here. I mean, to me, it's most interesting because Tosus is really into it. Tosus wants to know, well, if that's the case, why didn't the Shade himself do it? Why didn't he do the same thing? And one of the Terutzim he gives is he was afraid that the Shadim would be upset at him if he gave away their secrets. Okay. They didn't know, apparently, he was sort of enslaved to Rapapa to do his work.
The Shade can't drink the mayim, right?
No, he was bringing the water for the people in Rapapa's house.
Oh, okay.
So he was waiting till the water came by that the Shadim hadn't drunk from. I'm sure Tosus did believe in Shadim. The Vilna Gaon probably believed in Shadim too. So I don't know, if you trace back your grandparents probably believed in Shadim too, as did probably mine.
Certainly kept Zugos.
What's that? What? The answer with exposure to science. In other words, understand what Shadim provides is an explanation for the unexplained. And when science can explain, look, in the same way that people used to point, you know, used to look at, you know, shooting stars or the like as omens, right, or an eclipse, right? Did you read a kinetic Yankee in King Arthur's Court? Maybe you read, say, for Yirmiyahu, Meosos HaShamayim Al Techatu. Either one, right? You could see that these things, because people didn't understand why they were happening, they took this as a portent of evil. If you want to see perhaps the most primordial midrashic example of this is Adam Harishon, right, who sees the sun setting on him and thinks, because of my sins, I've caused this to happen. But if you think about what that expresses, it, you know, if God is the creator of the world, then he may express his displeasure through, you know, the forces of nature not work, you know, working the way they're supposed to work. Right? Once you understand that a solar, once you can predict a solar eclipse and you know why it happens, it kind of, what are you going to say now? You're going to say, oh, it's a sign of evil, because every, you know, 364 years, 14 days and 21 minutes, you have a solar eclipse in this position, because it means nothing anymore. Right?
Because that's how often people sin, and therefore that's when you have the...
Yeah.
One of them is there, are there any Gemara that talk about things like when they need wine? Like, what do they think was going on when alcohol was fermenting? They knew that was magic.
You're asking an interesting case, but they have no conception, probably, what we do. They saw what happened. They amazingly, I mean, if you think wine is not even amazing, the fact that they learned to make beer is incredible. Wine, you know, I that's my favorite, you know, line from that book that Kastner sent my way, you know, was, you know, step on grapes, you get wine, step on grain, you get sore feet, right? The amount of processing that it takes to convert grain into beer is astounding, and that man, without modern scientific methods and more importantly methods of analysis, managed to do what it is absolutely astounding when you think about it. Obviously, they're the same way making cheese. How did anybody? The answer is some of these things occur. They occur naturally. They're discovered by accident, and then someone, you know, attempts to replicate the process.
I'm saying my issue is that, like, it's something that they've sealed off, and they, like, they're not doing anything to it, like cheese.
But they don't have to know why. They know that it does. They've seen it happen.
It could be the devil's
work.
I mean,
they see a cause and effect.
Correct, even if they don't understand why. And they sometimes...
things which they don't even see a cause, they're going to assume it's a shape. So what, now my second question is, what about, like, golems? Where you have, like, Rava Bar Gavra, those sort of things, like, they don't explain anything. But, I mean, I would just put them in the same category.
Yes. You're asking me, do I think... do I believe in golems? No, I don't. Forget the golem. Forget that one, which was, you know, a pilfered tale. He would not be allowed to speak in YU. Let's put it that way, okay? On grounds of plagiarism. You know the Morales golem. Yeah, the Morales golem. That was a plagiarized from Sherlock. I mean, it was adapted from Sherlock Holmes, shall we say? I hate to tell you this. There are people. I don't want to say, I don't know, I haven't surveyed, I wouldn't be surprised if there are plenty of people in the yeshiva who believe it was true. There was someone who was a chavrus of mine for a time who was not so readily dismissed at the stories, and, you know, it's amazing how these, I'm not, I wouldn't even want to be Merames who it was, because I hope the person would have since grown more sophisticated, but I never know.
And,
a lot of kids believe in the tooth fairy also. So, okay, so anyway, so, yes, that people believed in them, we know, that's not the question. And they're, I'm not, you know, there's nothing in the Torah, let me do this, there's nothing in the Torah that indicates the Torah thinks they're real. All that you have in Tanakh is that the people believe. But that's true, by the way, that's true generally. The Torah, Tanakh, all the ancient Near Eastern mythology is demythologized in Tanakh. Some of it's resuscitated in Chazal. You know, some of the, you know, in other words, the God Yam is an example, right? In Tanakh, it's totally demythologized. But in Chazal, you'll get Sarosh Yam again. So it's an issue that's been discussed, but Tanakh is very much not so. In other words, you can have an open, honest discussion about whether or not the Torah recognizes the reality of Kishuv or not. In other words, the physical reality. That you can have a machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ramban.
Rochev Barabos.
What's that?
Rochev Barabos wasn't that referenced.
Well, that's a polemical comment. I don't know if you want to call that demythologizing, but...
doesn't mean there wasn't sorcery in Tanakh.
What's that? No question people are practicing it. The question is it efficacious? There's only one. What?
Say you get
and you should know, by the way, some of the rationalists among the Gaonim already sort of attempted to deal with that problem. There's some very clever interpretations that have been offered, by the way, of that.
Shaul
and the Balasov. My favorite one is the fact that the Balasov, of course, immediately recognized it was Shaul, and she put on a show because she knew what was going on, which is I can't tell you it's shot. I cannot tell you it's not out of the question. What, she didn't recognize the king? Okay. I guess maybe his picture wasn't all around.
Don't the portions say you only get miso for kishuv if it's efficacious?
No. No, it's clear you get miso. The Torah says you get miso for kishuv, period. The question is, the machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ramban is whether or not kishuv is effective but asur or ineffective and asur.
Then how can you get miso for something that you can't do?
It doesn't matter.
It's a masa.
If you worship Avodah Zarah, have you done anything? No, but you still
no,
get.
No, but something if you put like a magic show and pretended.
I'm not. Well, that Ochei Zasayinayim is either a magic show is either an Isser Lav or it's not Usser, but it's not. That's not one of the things that gets me said. That's a technical question whether or not it applies to that. Okay. Yes. Yes, and the Ramban was very bothered by it because it's the one case where the Ramban says, to quote the Ramban, "Va'al korchenu namin ledivra hayevonim shemilat hashemesh ba'avi halach yeh akeshes bitolada." And the Ramban, I know that line because I've read it many times, not because I know the Ramban bal peh. I probably couldn't recite any other line of the Ramban, but that's a classic passage in which he says you have no choice but to accept it. He says, take a glass of water and you see the sun's rays refracted, so you know that a rainbow is not automatically a sign of God's displeasure, and he deals with the question. That's not a kasha. That's not a kasha because the you know how you read those psukim is a entirely different discussion.
It's the displeasure part which is the kasha.
Well,
not the fact that it exists as a covenant. Because the laws of nature are set up from that point.
What about the fact that non-Jews see a rainbow?
Anyway, the natural thing to say would be that therefore, you know, it's absurd to look through a glass because God shows his displeasure to you by doing so.
So anyway, and by the way, you should realize, I think you're mixing up two things there, by the way. The reason why you don't look at a keshes has nothing to do with God's displeasure. Somebody you've said
no, talk about the fact that there is a keshet.
I understand that. The reason you know why you don't look at the keshes? Because of Yecheskel. Kemareach keshes hasheyan aminyom hageshem. That's the image of the whatever. Okay, fine.
But there's anyway, still the assumption that the fact that there has
fine.
To be a rainbow means that God wants to destroy us.
I'm sorry?
What's that image
of the Kiseh HaKavod. That's what Yecheskel says. He says, Kemareach Hakeshes Hashem Amiyam Hageshem Kain Marei Kvod Hashem or Nogah Kvod Hashem whatever. So that's the reason, and it could be that pshat in that line anyway is not Asu Listakel but Keshes is really the line doesn't originally mean that you're not allowed to look at a rainbow. Listakel means more than that. Listakel means Ma'ayin. It may not mean the Keshes that you see after the rain. It may mean the Keshes of Yecheskel, the prohibition of mystical speculation.
But you're not allowed to look at a rainbow.
Anyway, Ezra.
No, I'm not joking. How would one read and translate the next line of Gemara?
Which one?
The next one.
Ki Aser Avdimi? What did he say? No, I stand. Okay. Ki Aser Avdimi. Okay. Ki Aser Avdimi. I think, by the way, I'm not. You know, we've seen enough of Shadim. I think it's as a general point. You know, I think the Rambam statement here regarding Agadah is apropos, and I suspect that they did believe in a lot of this very literally. Maybe not all of them are on that, maybe not everything. I think that one who insists, there are sort of two camps. There are people who read this and ridicule Chazal. There are people who read this and say, Chazal said it, so therefore it must be true. Either true literally or engaged in all sorts of crazy explanations. And I think that both approaches are wrong fundamentally. In other words, I think that you have to read the Agadah carefully. Sometimes there's what that's meaningful to pull out of this type of Agada. Sometimes there's not. You have to recognize that just as somebody is going to read, someone can read the science that Poskim wrote 50 years ago and see certain things that today might not be, you know, it's probably not as far, obviously, as far away from our science as Chazal science was. We are products of a time. We don't live outside of time, outside of a particular context. That's the way we were created. So our science, by definition, is going to be limited. Chazal, it was no different. That's not a reason, Chas v'Shalom, to have any lack of respect for Chazal, but it is a recognition of what are the parameters of Chazal's authority and what are not. This is the point that Rav Avraham ben Aramba makes very strongly in that introduction that's printed, in that passage printed in introduction to Yaakov. You know, he writes that it's usher to follow anybody, you know, in matters of science and medicine just because of who the person is. He says it's usher miderech haTorah, miderech haSeichel. There's a difference between what is hora'ah, what is psak, and what is values versus what is science and medicine and the like. The only interesting area, and I'm not going to dwell upon it now, is how does one deal with the history? of Chazal, particularly on issues, I'm not talking about biblical history as much as Bayesheni history. And that's probably the touchy middle ground. But certainly when it comes to science and medicine, there's no doubt we neither accept the science and medicine of Chazal because they said it, nor do we lack any respect, do we lose any respect for them just because their science and medicine may be outdated. Okay. Ben?
There are other types of Haggadah, though.
I agree, but the other types of Haggadah obviously have to be read carefully and with thought, but they're not right or wrong, so you can't sort of ask that question. Moshe?
It begs the question, at least for me and maybe for others, how to distinguish between belief in these types of things where we might sneer at and our belief in God.
I mean, for starters, you're talking about one thing which is, I'll say, virtually scientifically disprovable, one which is not. Secondly, you're dealing with something that is central and something which is totally peripheral. Thirdly, it's not just Chazal. You know, God is central in Tanakh. Shedem, whether they're there or not there, whether the Torah seems to acknowledge their efficacy or just the fact that people believed in them, are peripheral, whereas God is the central belief of Tanakh. It's not just some Agadas in the Gemara. You know, you can ask, you know, you're setting up a straw man that's easy to knock down. You can ask things that are more somewhere in between. And on some level, I think all these factors come into play. As Ibn Ezra said, you know, the malach between man and his God is his seichel. And you have to know how to distinguish sometimes between Amar and Chazal that should be taken as Agada, Amar and Chazal that should be taken quite, you know, literally or authoritatively. I can't give you a rule on one hand exactly how you know. Some of it is a judgment call. Ari? So that's a complicated halachic, you know, decision, that how you decide whether or not the halacha was really correct but the reason was wrong, or whether or not, in fact, the din is wrong. And you pick an interesting case, because until 100 years ago, poskim are still writing as if it's true. The Mishnah Berurah believes it's true. That the lice, certain kinds of lice, are not part of a rabba, that they're spontaneously generated. The truth is, there is asexual reproduction, but that's the reason why they thought it is because they didn't see, you know, they didn't see the eggs, they didn't see whatever else. Those are not cases of spontaneous generation. So others have tried to reinterpret. Okay. What's that? I'll give other reasons. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in that one of those two Taramada lectures from over 20 years ago, said that, you know, I don't really buy this, but he said that Parva Rava doesn't mean that it Zachar Nekeva. Parva Rava means it grows in a healthy as opposed to a rotting environment. The truth is, one man's healthy is another man's rotting. I don't know, it's a very arbitrary aesthetic distinction, but you can try to reinterpret it. You can say, you know, the approach that's attributed to Rav Dessler, if you want to see a full treatment of the science on this, pure science and halacha, because this is not really halacha, see Sternberg's article in Badad, volume 4, I think it is. If you email me, I can send you back the article. I have it in PDF, the article and the follow-up stuff. It's a really a very important article. I highly recommend reading.
The one with the beginning was on the
kidneys being removed, the trephus and chulin. It starts out as a review. I have it scanned, so if you send either of us, we can send you back the article. But it's a very important article in terms of science and halacha, how posts can respond.
As a general rule, though, we don't, halacha is a special area, you can't apply the,
when you say halacha is special, what do you mean by that? In other words, do I mean that halacha itself, divorced from science, is not science? There's no right or wrong by the rules of science.
What about halacha based on science?
We don't yes, we don't automatically. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Okay. Ki asa Rav Dimi. Okay, enough of our shedim. Ki asa Rav Dimi. Where did Rav Dimi come from? Came from Eretz Yisrael. Rav Dimi was one of the... Was he an Achute technically? Okay. So he came from Eretz Yisrael. Amar, Maim Harishonim Achilu Besar Chazir. Not washing the tilas yadayim caused someone to feed someone pork. Achronim, hotziu ha'isha mibala, caused the man to divorce his wife. They caused a woman to be taken out from her husband. Ki asa ravin amar, rishonim hachilu b'sar nevela, achronim hargu asa nefesh. Okay. Amar of Nachum Har Yitzchak, And we're going to come back and discuss this. I'm not glossing over yet. V'simonech, asa ravdimi apka, asa ravin katla. Ravdimi was motziar mibayla, and then Ravin came and killed her. This is a simon, by the way. So Rashi just writes, Rashi says they knew that Ravdimi came down first to Eretz Yisrael, and Ravin came second, so that's how you remember it, because it's hard to kill a person, it's hard to divorce your wife after she's dead. Minor technical difficulty there. So that's what the simon was. That you remember that Ravdimi was the one who was mafikar, and Ravin was the one who killed her.
All right. Let's have lunch.
There is, by the way, I think, obviously, a simon that's being alluded to in this sequence anyway. What is that? Divorcing her and then killing her. Divorce then death.
Henry VIII.
Stern? I think so. Here it's the man who dies, but I think the sequence is being taken from that. Divorce then death. Okay, so anyway. So the question is, so let's just finish one more line. Rav Abba mas nechada mehani vechada mehani l'chumra. So if any funny use of the term chumra, itzum chumra was that the killing part, not the divorcing part. I'm not sure which is more chumra, chazir or nevelai, but I guess chazir is worse. Why? So Rashi says trei suri. I don't know what Rashi's talking about. There's no dinner nevela by non-kosher animals. It's just non-kosher animals. What's that? I didn't even look. Didn't know so I can't. What's the isser? That's chal on what?
Oh,
it's very clever.
The isser's on the machil. It's also usher to be schor in the velos. It's also the machalos asuros. So you say it was nizdam in lo, and everybody has to be mutter because it's beferish bekra. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about machalos asuros. Then even though say can of Rashi say anything? Nobody looked. I didn't look either. Such an obvious question, no?
It's the married iron. Wait, no, but it really is a sin. It's a public sinning. Isn't that like an extra?
I don't know. So anyway. So hechil the basar chazir and hotzias yishem ibayla. Now, what is the story talking about? So Rashi writes it's a reference to a story in Yoma. So did anybody look up the story in Yoma? Story time. Okay, that would have been a great final bechina. Just translate the passage. Still do that. Torture. So the Gemara tells the following story. There are a lot of good stories there, actually. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yosef come to a town. Rabbi Meir was Medayik Bishma. He used to pay attention to people's names. So if you ran into someone and his name was, you know, Russia Jones, so Rabbi Meir would have been very careful. It's like, what do you think about it? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef were not Medayik Bishma. Where was Rabbi Shimon, the last of the four? Probably hiding in his cave. So that's Mistama where he was. At least, you know, it's an interesting question. He's the fourth one, but he's not there.
He was ordering takeout.
So they come to a town. They need a shpizen. They need a lodging, and so they provide the town. It sounds from the Gemara actually that there's somebody in charge of the town of making sure somebody had someone to host them. So they go to this house. What's his name? His name is Kidor. So the mayor says, I don't trust this guy. Kidor tapuchos hema banim loimun bum. So therefore, he must be twisted. So Rameir did not give him his wallet to watch. Rabbi Yehuda Yosef entrusted the man with his wallet. Rameir went and buried his wallet in the cemetery, by chance, just by the headstone of this guy's father. That night in a dream, it appears to be Shabbos, actually. This is a true story. I don't know if it happened, but it's a true story. So don't shake your head, okay? This is an agada which you have to deal with, not an agada that you can just put aside.
Is it a real story, or is it
what?
A real story?
Hold on. So the story then continues that this guy has a dream. His father appears to him in a dream and tells him there's a fortune buried, you know, at the head of that guy, meaning myself. So even the dead people refer to dead people, the hugaver, euphemistically, apparently. Okay, so then he wakes up in the morning, he tells the Tanaim his dream. So they say to him, even the other two probably don't realize this, but they say, no, you know, with dreams, chumah d'beishim shei less ben mamasha. There's no mamashas in these types of dreams. Rabbi Meir, of course, realizes, like, okay, Rabbi Meir spent Shabbos in the cemetery guarding the place, right? So machshech ala tchum. Okay, fine. After Shabbos, he comes, he brings it. The next, they come to leave, and they ask him for their money. He said, what money? So they leave, and so Rabbi Meir says, why weren't you medayik b'shmo? So they said, but why didn't you tell us something? So he said, I'm choshesh, but I'm not going to be machzikim as a rasha. So then the story continues. There is such a notion, kabdeu v'chashdehu, right? The kabdeu k'rabin gamleo v'chashdehu k'ilistim mezuyan. There's Maseches Kala or something like that. There's the story about one of the Tanaim who invited the guy over, and he stayed in the attic, right? And he pulled the ladder out at night from the guy, from there, and the guy fell down and broke his neck. And the guy, that's kabdeu v'chashdehu, right? I'm not going to assume he's a Russia, but just in case, you know. So there it goes. He was going to come down at night to steal his stuff and run away or something like that. So anyway, so the Gemara then goes on to tell the following story as to how they got their money back, which was they went and they followed him, and they saw that he had, when he finished lunch, he hadn't wiped his mustache, he had lentils there. So they went back and told his wife, and said, your husband told us to give you our wallets that he entrusted to give us our wallets back. The simon that he entrusted was that he had lentils for lunch. So she went and gave him the wallet. So he came back and found out he killed her. That's the story is found in Yoma. So Rashi says that's Harguas HaNefesh. Okay, so
because
presumably
he didn't wash.
What's that?
Because he didn't wash.
Because he didn't wash. So of course that doesn't really explain things. So Rashi has to explain there, because it's derech of people. What my mechorim, you clean your hands, but the derech of people who wash my mechorim is also to wipe their mouth down. Okay, fine.
Is the point of the statement to express how important it is to do my mechorim?
Yes. Yes, it shows you that the lack of dittuk in mitzvahs leads to mishaps and tragedies.
Like,
what's that?
Like, do not steal.
No. Now, there's only one minor problem. So that's the story in Yoma. It's really a great story, and there's a lot to talk about it. Put that aside for the moment. However, notice in Rabbeinu Gershom, Rabbeinu Gershom writes the following: Achronu motziu ishem mibayla dahu daafkid kasa leintitei, a person who gave his wife a kos as a pikadon, ochal adashin v'yatzal l'shuk. He ate lentils and went out to the shuk. B'delo natal yadav mayim achronim. V'haya rasha echad shirak yishanasan abala kis. It was a kiss. It's funny. There's a shina here. Kos is a kos. Either way, le'ishto. U'bala isha v'amar la tinali akish yishanasan lich balich. Amar le ten li simen. So nasan la sh'achal adashim. V'shabala besev sipra lo hadvarim v'girsha. So the truth is, firstly, in this case, with this story, I understand a little more why he was mad. I mean, Kedar had nothing to be mad about. He was a crook. So they managed to cheat him. He should have just said, okay, they outwitted me. But in this case, the guy was upset because, well, you know, she fell for a stupid sim and divorced her. And later he says that, Klomar lo svir le degir shela katla. So what happened to the story? And by the way, the Gemara's, what does the Gemara in Yoma say? Does the Gemara, if I'm not mistaken, links it to Beferish and says, quotes this brisa of Mayim Achronim Harguas HaNefesh. Am I correct that the Gemara quotes that line there? Okay. So what's going on? So the answer appears to be, if you look in the Kisveyad of Yoma, the story is there, Shlomo, by the way. Don't forget that. Just not the part about them getting the kos back, the kisim back. You can't throw out the first part. In other words, the story's in all of them. The story ends with their not being able to get, in two of the three Kisveyad and then two of the four Kisveyad, the part about them going to get the stuff back is not there. One of them is very fragmentary, but it looks like it's not there. And the fourth one that we have there, Munich, has the story. It has the story. So it's not entirely clear. It's not entirely clear whether that story is really there or not. Rashi is clearly goreis that in the Gemara in Yoma, and clearly here he makes reference to it. But it's not in a lot of the Kisveyad. It's not in the Gersev. Strange enough, Rabbeinu Gershom was Rashi's predecessor. The story isn't there. I'm sure this has been written upon, but there are a lot of well-known stories that are referred to in the Gemara that are not spelled out and are found nowhere in the Bavli, Yerushalmi, or the like. In some cases, you may find them elsewhere in rabbinic literature. Sometimes Rashi quotes them. I don't know if it's from the Gaonim. Perhaps the most famous of these, but not the only one, is the Bruria story in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, when the story is told about they would go there on, you know, Hariga on him and his wife, forget what his wife and his daughter should be, Yosheves Bekuba Shel Zonos or something like that. And it says V'hochi Hava. And Rashi quotes the story. We don't know where the story is from. There's one in Moed Katan, I think, about taking a child out to the cemetery and, you know, about the Easter, not Moed Katan, in Kiddushin.
Kiddushin
at the end of the Niyichud passage, way at the end of the Masechta, on probably Pei or Pei Alpha Mid Beis, where the story is told about a Maisa, and Rashi tells a story, there may be one version of the story. We don't know where this story is. Maybe it's a Masechta Skitanus, we don't really have it. You have these stories that the Rishonim are aware of, a text of a story, but we don't actually have it. So here too, so that, I don't know what to do with exactly the Hargus and Efesh. So it's there in the Vilna edition of Yoma, and Rashi had it, but it's not there for other Rishonim. It's not there in most of the manuscripts. All right, what is Hachilu B'sar Chazir? So Rashi writes, Shayachen Vani Yisrael Mochar Basar Shchut Li Yisrael U'mevashel U'machilam U'sha'ovid Kochav and Babachanu So Machilu Nevelos U'bar Yehudi Echad Lecho V'lonot Hayad V'chasavar Shazah Right, so if you don't know, it's kind of like the person who you don't know is Jewish. So you know, if the maitre d' doesn't offer to seat him in the kosher section because she assumes he's not wearing a kippah, he's not Jewish, and doesn't really matter, doesn't care. Ezra,
that doesn't really make sense for Chazir because you'd be able to tell that it's pig meat because it's different. It only makes sense for Nevela.
I don't know. No, there are light. You know, you could have veal. Right. I know. You know, it's so whatever. The interesting question is, what was the Jew doing with Chazir?
I thought the whole thing was that it was during the Roman persecution.
Says that. Who says that?
I don't know. I remember hearing the story in first grade. They told us why that's why we should wash.
Because the Romans might come and persecute us.
they might feed us a pig.
Yeah. So I forget who says that. Somebody says that. Maybe Beis Yosef quotes such a thing. Yeah, the Beis Yosef quotes such a thing. There is a din. I don't think we've encountered this. Did we encounter this yet this year? We did it at the beginning of the year. Schar b'machalos asuros. We know that certain things are mutar b'hana, but nonetheless, even though the Asar b'achila, the Chachamim prohibited engaging in schar b'machalos asuros. I mean, it's one thing to get hana; it's another thing to make it make commerce or regular commerce with it. There are four exceptions to this rule. Number one, something that's only asar midrabbanan. Number two, things that are whose purpose in the schorah is not for eating. So if you want to engage in raising horses, not so they can be slaughtered and sold for horse meat, but so that they can be used by ranchers and the like, so then that's mutter as well. If you want to raise pigs so that they can be used to make footballs for the NFL, so that should be mutter as well. But if you want to raise non-kosher animals or deal in nevelos and trefas so that the meat will be eaten, at least on a regular basis, that you engage in that commerce, that's usser. So that's heter number two. Heter number three is if it's nizdamein lo. And this is the chance heter, meaning if it's nizdamein lo, a particular isser, by chance you happen to encounter, it happened to chance upon it, so you're allowed to sell it. But that's a machlokas hatanayim, whether that's limited to someone whose profession is hunting and he happens to catch a non-kosher animal, or whether that is generically, that's mutter for any person. Rabbi Huda says af kol adam. We don't paskin like Rabbi Huda. And the fourth heter is chaylev nevela and chaylev trefa. Because the Torah says, there's a very famous taz there in Siman, whichever Siman is, Kuf Tesayin, I think it is, a very famous taz about how the Chachamim have no power to be gozer on something that's beferish b'Torah leheter. That's how we understand. What?
What about
nevela? So the answer on nevela, so there are those who say there that everybody has to be moda, the nevela, but derech akrai is also mutar, nevela and trefa. Because the truth is, that's the only way Nevela and Trefa typically comes up for us anyway. Right? Which is, we have no incentive. We don't want something to be a Trefa, and we don't intentionally make something a Nevela. So it only comes up, it's basically Nizdamein Lo, and therefore that's Mutter. And so, yeah. I'm sorry, Bitzal, you were.
I mean, is Yasa
No, but it may be. Tosh's point is not that if there's a mitzvah, the Chacham can't prohibit it. Even if it's a heter, the Torah can't prohibit it.
The Lashon is, like, he had the Lashon by Nabila, is to do this or that.
Yeah, would be translated maybe. Yeah. But anyway, so those are the four exceptions. The Rabbanans, not for eating purposes. Nizdamein lo, either at Sayed or not. Sometimes you don't, certainly don't need to be at Sayed by Nevelos and Trefos. And finally, Chelev Nevelo, Chelev Trefa. So the question is, what is this guy doing with it? So he could have been some. So the Beis Yosef quest two things there. Maybe he was an Adam Rasha. He violated this particular din. Okay. It's clear that on some level, some people were still doing it, because the Mishnah says that they were gozer. They at a certain time, the Mishnah in Bava Kamma says they have had an aror upon someone who was pidimim gadol chazerim in Eretz Yisrael. So people were doing it. So Tosus asked this kasha. Tosus says because they were raising it not for food. Okay, that's possible. It's possible. It was already awesome. It was one of the 10 takanas of Ezra, I think. The merubah. So the teretz to that kasha is that the teretz to that kasha was yes, but it wasn't. You weren't omed ba'orah. So now they added an orah to it. The only thing is it tells you that people weren't necessarily observing it. Okay, but maybe they weren't engaged in Sfar Machas Masoros. Maybe they only disregarded the takana of Ezra. Shlomo?
It's also to raise bain with darkness.
What's that? He says, what do you mean? He says, the quote, at least he says either there was Shas HaShmad,
right,
or he was a Rasha. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so that's the story of Basar Chazir. So Jews, there's a good reason why, if any of you were at, what was the fellow's talk, that distinguished philosopher from Princeton?
Did he speak about this issue?
The fact that pork might be banned, right?
That was Ezra.
Ezra, yes, there we go.
A-double-A.
Okay. So anyway, I don't know whether non-Jews should be allowed to have pork in Eretz Yisrael, but Jews shouldn't be raising pigs in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Yeah. Not saying that Kfiyat Datit is a good idea, but at least Medina.
Abia thought it was a good idea.
Not exactly. Not at all. Not at all.
Not at all.
Barely so.
He said it was natural, and fighting against it is like fighting the weather. That's what he said.
No, he did not say that. He didn't say that. I'm not even getting into discussion. He didn't say that we should be in favor of Kfiyat Datit. Okay, there we go. Then.
What is it that it's better to do, according to the Rambam, than to take tzedakah? To be mocher nevelas bashuk?
Shot nevela bashuk.
To cut it up?
Yeah, to strip a hide. But that doesn't mean that's derech hakrai. No one, you don't make that. First, that may not be schor machas asur. It means you have to be the owner. A and B, it may refer to when Jews shechted meat and it turned out to be an avela. You're allowed to sell that to a guy. You have to strip it down. You have to process it. Okay. Any questions about that? Shlomo?
I have a question about that. I was wondering whether we're doing questions. You have questions. I don't have any questions personally. I just
test 3 days on
shaded. This is a Gemara, not a question.
It's okay.
Very important to learn about shading.
Getting back on the question.
Appropriately.
Yeah, let's go on.
No. Tomorrow question.
Sunday.
Back one.
Let's start off with me. The last time I had questions, I got these charming ones lobbed at me. Okay.
No female rabbi questions. That's the new rule. No female rabbi questions.
Yeah. Maybe I pine for the day they start asking me grammar questions again. Okay. Itamar! Who would like to read now? Now that I have carried us across the sea, back on dry land. I want one comment. When you do Agada in the future, it tends to be hard. Someone asked me about using a Sansino. I think it's perfectly legitimate. I think one of the things you must do, though, is you want to go back and understand every single word that was used in the Aramaic. It's very hard to do, but the only way you will get good at Aramaic, and Aramaic is the key to many texts, particularly Yerushalmi, Targumim, other literature of Chazal, and passages in the Bavli, the only way you get good at Aramaic is by doing it. It is hard at first, But the more you do it, the easier it becomes. There are occasionally very difficult words. That's why you have a dictionary. But if you do it enough, you reach a point where you don't need to pull the dictionary except for once in a very rare occasion. Go ahead. Who's reading? Who volunteered? Did I see a volunteer? Sutton. Go ahead. Okay. So Chame Ha'or. What are Chame Ha'or?
Heated water.
Hot spring.
Solar panels.
Not heated water. Water heated by fire.
Or, not Chama.
Chizkia Amar, Einot Lemeyadayim. Why not? So, what did Bryce say earlier?
It's
a classic machlokas Rashi. Classic, if you want to see a great example of the methodology of Rashi versus Tosfos. It's the second time, at least, we've seen it this semester. One was on the Parva Rachel question, which was how did that shtim with the opening passage of the Sugya that Gedi meant Parva Rachel b'mashma. And the answer was Rashi said it's a machlokas, and Tosfos said no, it's asking a different question. So here, the issue comes up again. At the beginning of the Sugya, we had two Lashonos in the Gemara. The latter Lashon assumed that Chaman was mutter for everything except for Mayim Achronim. So what are we talking about here right now? So the Pashto, which Mayim are we talking about here? Rishonim or Achronim? We're talking about Rishonim here. Because the analogy that's going to be made here, the discussion, does Rashi even say that Beferish? I don't know. Where does he say that? Yes, okay. It's clear from the continuation of the sugya because matbilin is something you would only do for Mayim Rishonim. It's about Taras Yadayim. It's not about Nekias Yadayim. I mean, you'd have to be clean too, but that's a separate concern. So there's Machlokas Bechamer. So Chizkiya's position seems to be against the Braisa earlier. So Rashi says, Einot Lemei Mayim Rishonim, Upalagad Le'el V'Chizkiya Tanahu. Chizkiya was Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe, actually, I think. And so he is very early. He's just about a Tana. So Chizki Atana Hu Palig. He disagrees. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar, no, Lemelia Daim, he happens to agree with the Brice early. We don't say, at least in Rishon, say, we don't say Rabbi Yochanan Tana Hu Palig. The only Amor of the Bavli we say who's a Tana and is Palig is Rav. Rav's the one who's said explicitly about. I'm sorry? Rabbi was a Tana. We say Rav Tanu Palig. Rav is usually an Amora, but he has by the rules of the game, he'll argue Rechi was Mamish Tana.
Also, there are two
Rechi. Rabbi Chia, Rebbe's confidant, Rebbe's right hand man, Rav's uncle, was a Tana for sure.
I think I saw somewhere that says Rechi Tanu
Palig. I don't think it's there, but you can go find it down. I'll be happy to be corrected. Fine. So that's Chame Ha'or. Toso says. Read Ezra. V'had the Tanya
Le'el. V'had the Tanya El. Mayim Rishon Nudnim Ben Bechamin Ben Betzonen. Muki, I think it is La.
Moki Lachiskiya. That's just Lishna the Gemara. That's the way it's in. Moki Lachiskiya.
Kelishna Kama the Rav Yanai the Le'el. Kesheein Hayad Zoledet Ba. In any when it's not hot enough for it's not yet whatever.
So you would say that the Lishna Kama there has banning Mayim Chamin. Allows Mayim Chamin for Mayim Rishonim, Mayim Achronim, Dafka when Eina Yatzo Ledespo. But Yatzo Ledespo, even Mayim Rishonim, according to one Lashon, wouldn't be Mutter. So Yosef Chizki is talking about Mayim Shayatzo Ledespahan. Rabbi Yochanan de Shari Hacha, Belash. Okay, so he probably should be Kilashon Basra. So Rabbi Yochanan Mahol like the Lishna Basra. Now Tosfos just says Rav Chinam. Rashi's answer was unnecessary. Okay, this is really represents their approaches to the way you explain the way you mafarish Gemara.
How do you wash your hands with water that's
because Yatzo Ledes. I don't want to get into the question exactly the defiance of this, but Yatzo Ledes may only mean that when you stick your hand in it first, not expecting, you recoil from the heat. But it may be, different people have different thresholds. I marvel at certain people who can either take showers or eat, drink liquids. You know, I know my mother will drink liquids hot. She'll say something is too cold for her, and I'd scald my mouth on it. So people have different temperature sensitivities. So you can certainly pour hot water over your hands quickly. I don't recommend doing it if But it's if it's what?
Is water was not Yad
Saladas? Even if it's Yad Saladas.
Isn't that water?
What?
She says it's not Yad Saladas,
so it
wouldn't be Yad.
Okay. Anyway, continue. And even though I'm not taking questions, you'll get an interesting discussion in what follows. Go ahead. Well, not the next part. Good. Not this part. Good. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Olchot Taros means he used to be Nizar and Tumah V'Tara. Remember, Rebbe and the Tanaim preceded him and his children after him lived in a time where there was no Mikdash. And Rebbe was not a Kohen. Nonetheless, he was probably Ochel. Rebbe Gamliel, the son, was Machbit to be Ochel Chulim V'Tara, probably.
All the elders of the Galilee did so.
Would do so. They would wash Mayim Chamin. Okay. Next.
Did they start to us this?
Only if you became tummy to a mace.
And they never. I mean, they're living in the post locks, right?
Eretz Yisrael. Rebbe. Rebbe the Nasi. Go ahead. Matfilin. You don't dip them, you immerse them. You can. It's a perfect image for Pesach. Dip your hands in the salt water and then crunch. No, it doesn't work that way. That's metablin. Matbilin means to immerse themselves. Immerse your hands. There is a din, by the way, if you learn the Mishnayos and Chagig of Tefilas, you can do Netilas Adayim, or you can be matbil your hands in Mei Mikvah. Okay?
You have to say a different bracha.
Yes, we discussed that a little bit last year. So anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan, Avol Matbilin Behem Li Adayim, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, One second. So this is a machlokas, how you treat Chamei Tveria. What are Chamei Tveria? I understand. Okay, thank you.
What's
that?
Okay.
It should be metabolin.
Okay,
I understand.
So I delayed reaction.
What?
You guys don't see metabolin?
You probably do, because you have a Masoret HaKriya, which is probably correct.
But if you get all the Haggadahs from me, it won't
matter. No, but it should be metablin. Right? Yeah, Shebuchol Laila is a Shtei Pamim. No, we don't immerse twice. Even the Hasidim probably don't immerse twice. Maybe once, but not twice. Okay. That's actually a great line. That's, you know, Purim on Pesach for you. But what is the status of Chamei Tveria?
Oh, they were heated by the sun, which goes under the earth at night.
So this is, the question is the following. Why exactly is it that they should be pasul? So Rashi says two things, actually. One is that Shasa Kosher, they never had a Shasa Kosher. The other is that that they sruchim. Now, the question is, are Chamei Tveria Chamei Ha'or or Chamei Ha'chama? So this would appear to be a machlokas. It's a machlokas. In Shabbos, it comes up. You have to find exactly where it is. It's somewhere in Parakira. I think that's where it is. I think it's a machlokas for Biosi and the Chachamim somehow it works out. Whether Chamei Tveria Chamei Ha'or or Chamei Ha'chama. Because it should be connected to the Master Sheviyumai and Besilon. So the question is, what's going on there? So the truth is, there is a famous passage. It's the passage that really should be enough to convince any individual that Chazal's science was really representative of the science of their times in so many ways. It's a passage in Pesachim, Daf Tzadi Dalam and Beis. The Gemara there quotes a machlokas between Chachmei Yisrael and Chachmei Umos Ha'olam. Chachmei Umos Ha'olam say that the sun goes below the Rakia during the day and it goes below the earth at night. And the Chachmei Yisrael say, now remember, the ancients had to explain how the sun got from the west where it set in the night, how did it come back to the east the next morning? So the question is, did it go underneath the earth or did it go above the Rakia? Because they perceive the Rakia as a solid substance which you could not see through. And the luminaries were somehow fixed and rotated within the firmament. Very. Well, you don't know about the visual part. Very possibly, very probably. So yes. Yes. It certainly sees it as a solid, hence the term rakia, and it holds up the water, you know, except for when the windows open and you get a flood. We understand.
The sun can't go up.
What's that?
I guess the sun wouldn't be able to go up there.
No, I think,
no,
I
it could go behind.
Could the sun fall down if it's raining at night?
Sanaa, however. Sandra,
was,
I have a line, but I'm going to save it.
It was
okay?
The voice. It was the voice.
Anyway, so it was a shade, yes. So the Rebbe then says something. Rebbe says something astounding.
Roa
he says, "V'nirin divrehan midvareinu." Their opinion would appear to be more correct than ours. And they say something astounding. He says that Teda Shemayanos are Sonan and Bayom and Cham and Balayla. The hot springs are warmer at night than they are during the day. Now, I haven't done an experiment myself, but my Libi Omer Li that the hot springs are no warmer at night than they are during the day. But they feel warmer because when
air
you get out at night, it feels much colder. When you get out during the day, it's warmer. You don't feel... You feel like the hot springs were not quite as warm in comparison to the outside air temperature. Now, why did Rebbe think that this was a raya? Obviously, Rebbe belonged to the Flat Earth Society, as did many, many thousands and millions of people in his day. There is, by the way, if you don't believe it, there is a Flat Earth Society today. You can search on the web. I don't think it's a hoax website. I think that these people could probably be condemned for insanity. But nonetheless, there are people who insist that the entire thing is a hoax.
We didn't land on the moon.
What's that?
We didn't land on the moon.
Well, that's famous. You should know, by the way. You don't have to be a flat Earth person for that. Rav Yaakov, the story is told. Yaakov Kamenetsky was standing there, and someone said to him, "Well, it's all a hoax anyway, because there's no air on the moon, according to them. So how does the flag stand up?" And the answer is, the scientists at NASA realized that, so they put wires in the flag. Otherwise, the flag would have just drooped down. Yes.
There's all those other conspiracies about the flag waving.
Listen, if someone is, you know, there are people who live with the motto of, "I've made up my mind, don't confuse me with the facts." Okay? It's the way it is. So anyway, so Rebbe, so that's what the Gemara there says. Now, Rebbe is assuming, of course, that explains to you where the Shita comes from, that Chame Tveria, Chame Achama, because how are the hot springs warmed? Which is a question, again, that the ancients had to have asked themselves. How are the hot springs warm? Well, one answer is, if the sun passes underneath the earth at night, it's closer to the source of the hot springs. That's why the springs are warmer than during the day. It's much farther away. And that's how the Chame Tveria Kami Chame Hachama. The reality is
that's
from
a...
It is very mistaber. We laugh, we smile in certain ways, but our laughing should be limited to those people who are contemporaries, not to people in the time of Chazal. When you know... As someone has said, we stand on the shoulders of giants. They asked Einstein, you know, about his accomplishments, and he said he stood on the shoulders of Newton. Newton.
No,
Einstein said that in reference to Newton.
No, I thought Newton's.
It's a famous... The point is that we take certain things for granted that perhaps in 100 years that people then will laugh and wonder how we believe them. So the issue is not, it's not how people once upon a time believe certain things, it's how people can have things in front of their eyes and still refuse to believe them. That's really the kasha. So the bottom line now, the reality is from a halachic perspective, it may not be 100% clear. It is mistaber, we paskin probably this way anyway, that Chame Tveria should be treated as Chame Ha'or. Why? So it's mistaber from a halachic perspective because the source of heat for hot springs is the magma that flows within the earth, and that is being heated by what?
No, by the pressure. The pressure.
By the core. What is the core of the earth? Molten iron. I've never been down there. Mistama, the temperatures at which scientists estimate that it's at, it's glowing. Glowing metal has the din of Aish.
Doesn't that get its heat from the sun?
What? No.
If the sun went away, that heat would start dispersing.
Yes.
It will continue. There is an enormous amount of stored up thermal energy in there that is kept in only by the crust, the rock. That's how you get volcanoes and things like that.
Originally caused by the sun, like in the Big Bang.
No, I thought it's the pressure.
Not necessarily the sun.
Gravity creates so much pressure in the center of the Earth.
The Earth's core is already heated.
Because the sun heated it.
What's that?
Because it was created that way when the world was created?
Yes, I mean, from the time that the Earth formed, it had a molten core. That's also why we have magnetism, magnetic poles. Putterman, don't start with me. Okay. So the bottom line is that right now what you have there, even though no one's been down there to see it, the best working sign, maybe this will turn out not to be true. Maybe there'll be a bunch of little leprechauns in the middle of the Earth, you know, pumping coal into a furnace, but that might still be Chameh Ha'or, right? So no one's been there to see it. But as best the science can tell today, there is a molten core of iron at the center of the Earth that should be considered. Again, we can ask the question, is something not visible, what's its status? But at least as best as we can extrapolate from the way Chazal treat known things, that should have the din of Aish, it's glowing metal, and therefore the that which is heated by it is going to have the din of Chameh Ha'or, not Chameh Ha'chama. Okay, that is a machlokas in Chazal, because the other sheet, by the way, says what? Why is it Chameh Ha'or? Because it's Chalfei HaPischei B'Gehenim. Okay? Anyway, so the in terms of halachically speaking, the Pashas is it's Chameh Ha'or. That we should consider as we talk about the Machlokes of Chizkia and Rabbi Yochanan. Rashi does seem to treat it as, in fact, Chameh Ha'or. Because his assumption is, Rashi writes, Lo Hoysalo Shasa Kosher. Now that's a very interesting statement in its own right. In other words, cold water that you heat on a regular fire could have been once used for the Tilas Vedayim when it was cold, but now it's been heated. Here the assumption is the water was always hot. Now the truth is, obviously the water wasn't always hot either.
That could be the assumption. Couldn't it just be based on the idea of let's low Bali Olam? So the time is Bali Olam, it's always hot.
Correct. And so what I was going to say was that the Rashi might simply say that even though technically speaking this water does in some ways come from some place, the water trickles down, you know, through, you know, holes in the ground and reaches the point where it's being heated and then it gets, you know, bubbles back up. So you might say that in the way that it's Bala Olam, that is considered something new, and therefore from the point at which it would have been useful to us, it never had a Shasa Kosher being cold water. And therefore we would say that it's Chameh Ha'or, but never had a Shasa Kosher, and therefore it might be possible for Netilas. That's why everybody might agree it's possible for Netilas Yadayim. Okay, any questions about it? Nadav?
No, thanks. I haven't done research into what Chazal thought, but I have done a little bit of reading on it. I think about 2,000 years ago, most educated people thought that they did not think the earth was flat.
Let's put it this way.
Underneath. That's fine. I'm just saying, you said the Rebbe was a member of the Flat Earth Society.
A
misconception that people used to think the earth was flat.
There were those among the Greeks, I forget who it was who calculated in Alexandria, calculated the circumference of the world to about 24,000 miles, which is pretty good. It did it based upon shadows. I think the assumption there the world was actually round, but I don't think it was Muscum e Piacol. I mean, I don't know about this.
No, the sailors knew it because
I knew because you lose the horizon.
Exactly, you lose it from the
but the bottom line is the world wasn't the sphere. Maybe they thought I you know, let me put it this way. So I will tell you also, I can't talk about curvature. There is another Gemara in Bava Basra which makes amply clear also that I don't think it's the Gemara itself. I think it's explicit in the Tanakh. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua have a machlokus whether the world is similar to a kuba or to an achsadra. An achsadra is walled on three sides, open on the fourth, and a kuba is a tent which is walled on four sides.
And that
assumes essentially, again, I can't tell you proofs about curvature, but it assumes a place that you could fall off. Let's put it that way.
There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah which is not 100% clear.
The Kador. But that's not clear. So let me put it this way. Those who depicted the creators of those statues knew that the world was round. But whether or not, but you look at Rashi doesn't know what the symbol is. Tosafot, I think, does, right? Right, Rashi didn't know what the symbolism was, and the Gemara is not explicit either, because they may not have known. So yes, the Balei Tosafot already know the world is round. It's the Rambam. What?
The whole point is that it's a symbol of power.
Agreed. The question is why. Maybe it's a symbol of power because they get to throw things at you. You know. But the bottom line is you can tell from the Gemara. I don't know about the Yerushalmi, but in the Bavli you can tell at all. And Rashi doesn't know it either. So yes, that should have been a tip-off, but it's not clear who knew who didn't. So there are certainly Shitos certainly Shitos and Chazal that regard the world, again, I can't comment on the hemispheric part, but certainly regard the bottom of the world as flat, because if you think it's a sphere, the sun is farther away from the source of the hot springs at night than it is during the day. And so again, this is what these beliefs, Chazal were not necessarily scientists themselves. Their beliefs in science and medicine were simply derived from the peoples around them, exactly the same way that our science is derived today. We're not any different than they were in that regard, and one day some of our science may also be overturned, and that's the way it is. Okay.
I found the